She'd still been alive when he'd touched down at Heathrow.
"She's still here, Dad,"
Sam had said when he phoned home. But somewhere on the M3, she'd slipped away from him.
"She didn't regain consciousness, Bob," Helen said at the door. "I'm so sorry, but it was peaceful. A good death."
He'd sat on the Lloyd Loon chair and held her cold hand, starting to rub it warm from habit, then stopping.
"Hello, love. I'm home."
He'd put Eileen's instructions in his inside pocket, against his heart, when he and Sam had gone to the funeral director's to talk about arrangements for the service.
"I might try to sneak in the old rugged cross," he'd said, and Sam had laughed.
"She'd haunt you forever if you do."
"That would be nice," he'd smiled back.
The funeral went well, with everyone laughing and crying over Starman at the end. Then tea and more tears in the garden centre restaurant Eileen had picked, surrounded by the heady scent of late blooms.
"She'd have loved this, Bob,"
his sister-in-law whispered.
"You've done her proud."
He hoped he had.
"Have I, Eileen?" he wondered.
"Everything is perfect. Now go and help Sam with the oldies,"
his wife murmured back.
"When are you going back to work?"
one of the aged uncles asked, dropping crumbs down his black tie.
"Tomorrow," he heard himself answer. "I've got a case on that I need to finish. It'll keep me busy for a bit. Then I'll take some time off."
He couldn't leave it unfinished. There would be time for grieving later. Zara had been in touch first thing in the morning. There'd been sightings of Jamie Lawrence overnight. The boy he'd been looking for had been hiding in plain sight, it seemed. But his photograph had ended that. Every man and his dog had seen him. Salmon had sent a text to let him know, and he'd responded immediately, unable to sleep and grateful for the distraction.
"When did you get back?" he'd asked when she picked up the phone.
"A couple of days ago, or maybe yesterday. Sorry, still not sure what time zone I'm in. Were you awake?"
"Yes, not sleeping."
"I'm so sorry, sir."
"Thank you, Zara. We all are, but we're coping. We've had time to prepare."
"Do you want me to keep you in the loop, re Jamie Lawrence?"
"Definitely. Eileen's funeral's this afternoon, and I'll be in tomorrow."
"Sure?"
"Sure."
Bangkok, day 20. Friday the 15th of August, 2014. It hadn't been much of a party, just a case of drinking enough to dull the misery she felt. Jamie had drunk recklessly, disappearing to Mama's cold store for more booze and sending bottles skittering across the floor as he emptied them. It was late, way past midnight. Time to make the call. "I'm ringing home," she said, more to herself than the boy slumped on the floor. "Mum and Dad will be back from work now. I've got to. But what am I going to say? What would you say to your mum, Jamie?" He looked at her blankly for a moment. "My mum? Which one?" "What? You've got a stepmum, like Rosie?" "Actually, I had four, if you include the two foster mums." "Oh." He took a deep breath, as if he was about to dive into a wave, and there was nothing she could do to stop him. "I was in care and then adopted. Then when I got too much from my adopted mum, I lived in a home until I was 17. "Oh, Jamie," she said, pushing a bottle out of the way and squeezing in beside him. "It's all a long time ago. I don't tell people usually, because it makes them think I'm different from them. My social worker said I was too sensitive, that not everyone is judging me, but they are." And it all tumbled out about his childhood. His mum couldn't cope. He had vague memories of her, her smell, a burning smell, cheap cigarettes constantly burning down in the ashtray or between her nicotine-stained fingers. Matches being struck, that smell of stale ashtrays. "She sometimes smiled at me," Jamie said, off somewhere in his head. and I'd hug her legs. Then she'd cry. I remember being hungry. Then there were the foster mums. Alex tried to keep up with the moves, but Jamie was talking faster and faster. The first was old and smelled funny. Lots of children. I was in a crowd, but on my own. I was only 4. I kept a matchbox that belonged to my real mum in my pocket to put things in. Alex reached for his hand in sympathy and held on tightly. That must have been awful. You were so little, she said. Yeah, the second foster mum was younger, but I was wet in the bed and she cracked one day and slapped me. The social worker saw the mark, and then there was mum number 3, my adopted mum, and dad. I had to change school to live there. I was wearing the wrong uniform and the children stared. And one asked, why are you wearing a blue jumper? I didn't know. I had to talk to the nice lady in the staff room, with biscuits and squash. I was punching and biting the other children. That was the worst time. And when I got into more trouble later, I ended up at the home. I was glad in a way. I'd had enough of families by then. Did you ever try to find your real mum? Alex said, fascinated and horrified in equal measure. I thought she was dead. One of the foster mums told me that. But I got my full adoption certificate and my original birth certificate when I needed a passport to come here. It was the first time I really knew who I was, I suppose. When I saw my mum's name, Anita Way, I thought I'd go and look at the house where she'd been living when I was born. The address was on the certificate. It wasn't that far, up near Kingston. I caught a train from Portsmouth and changed at Clapham Junction. When I found the address, I stood on the pavement trying to remember living there. A woman walked past me up to the door and I asked her if she knew Anita, who used to live there. But it was her. No, Alex breathed. I thought I must be hallucinating, but it was Mum. She didn't know it was me until I told her, and she went all panicky. She pulled me in so no one else would see me. It was funny. She didn't smell the same. She was smartly dressed. There was a big telly in the living room, other children's things. She had another family. She didn't care when I said I'd been told she was dead. I was, she said, dead inside. When I tried to ask her why she put me in care, she got angry. You were a mistake, Jamie. He imitated a woman's voice, high and harsh, and Alex shivered. She said it wasn't her fault. She didn't find out until it was too late to get rid of me. My dad wasn't around. She had been young and she couldn't have me in her life now. She hadn't told her husband about me or her kids. I said I was one of her kids, but she said I was her dirty secret. There was a silence, and Alex wondered if there was more, or if he'd told anyone else. She hoped he had. She didn't want to be the keeper of his secrets. She had too much to deal with already. I shouldn't have gone to look, should I? Jamie whispered to himself. This is not your fault, she said, taking charge. It was a wicked thing to say. You didn't deserve that. But now you're leaving me too. Oh, Jamie, please let's not start that again. You're going to be fine, she said. Come on, you need to go to bed. You're going to feel awful in the morning. She left him climbing onto his bunk and went to her room. She was thirsty after the beer. She needed a bottle of water. Mama kept them in the cold store. She wondered if it was open. Must be. Jamie went out there earlier to get beers. She'd go and help herself. She was leaving in the morning anyway. She didn't care what Mama would say. The guest house was quiet. She wondered if she was the only person still awake as she crept through the door into the courtyard. She'd been out there a couple of times to find Jake, chatting to him while he did his chores. The door to the cold store was stiff and she put all her weight into pulling it open, hoping it didn't make a noise. It was pitch black inside. She got her new phone out and pressed it to light up the screen. She was shivering at the sudden drop in temperature and quickly reached into one of the crates for the water, then turned to leave. She stumbled, stubbing her toe on something solid but soft. She steadied herself against the crates, making the bottles chime, and flicked her phone down at her feet. There was something sparkly. She reached down to pick it up and recoiled violently, wetting her pants in fear. Rosie's glittery fingernail. She didn't remember shouting, but she must have done, because Jamie was suddenly there, pulling her out of the cold store. "Rosie," she said. He went to look and came out too quickly. "She's dead," he said. His voice sounded dead as well. Why wasn't he shouting or something? Alex was too shocked to cry. She was cold and she shook until her teeth chattered. She wanted to speak, but her jaw spasmed every time she tried. Jamie tried to lead her inside, but she pulled back. "No," she said, between her clenched teeth. "Can't leave her." "She doesn't need you now, Alex. Rosie is dead." "Who did this?" "I don't know," he hissed. He didn't seem drunk anymore. "We need to get an ambulance and tell the police. Tell someone." "I'll do that. You go to bed." She snorted in disbelief, and her anger released her drawer. "Bed. My friend is dead. What are you talking about?" "I'm your friend, Alex," he said quietly. "Of course you're not. We've only known each other 5 minutes. I'm going to get the police. There's a police station at the corner of Kalsan Road." She was shouting into his face, but his expression didn't change. "You came out here earlier to get beers. You must have seen her," she suddenly screeched. "No, I didn't." "Oh God, you did, didn't you? And you didn't say anything. Did you do this? Did you kill her?" Jamie turned his head slowly to look at her. His eyes were blanks in his face. "Stop shouting," he said.
Chapter 67. Friday, the 19th of September, 2014. The detective. Jamie Lawrence looked up at him through his lashes. He was dirty, his nose was running, and the healing burns on his face were a dull red. "Hello, Jamie," Sparks said, reaching down to pull him up to standing.
"We've been looking for you."
The younger man blinked. He'd been asleep in the bin store of a children's home, curled up like a stray cat. The neighbourhood watch volunteer who lived opposite had noted him wandering around the day before and rung it in to the local police. "Possible intruder at Meadow View. Young male, baseball cap, scarf over face." The duty sergeant had noted the details with a small sigh.
"Probably an inmate returning after curfew. Who breaks into a children's home?"
But the next shift noted the cap and scarf and rang the Southampton incident room. "We may have a sighting of your suspect," the Kingston DI said. "What do you want us to do?" "Scope out the grounds, but don't go in," Sparks said. "I'm on my way." The intruder was still asleep when Sparks had creaked open the bin store door and ended the hunt. There was no chase, no wrestling to the ground, no cursing or punching. Just a blink. "I'm D.I. Sparks, and this is D.S. Salmond. We want you to come with us." Salmond put the handcuffs on, as Sparks read him his rights. "Jamie Lawrence, I'm arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Alexandra O'Connor on or about August the 14th, 2014. You don't have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence," he said, and felt a small flicker of triumph.
"Got you."
The boy had blinked again. His solicitor, a dusty duty man, sat next to him in the interview room. "Can you give us your name, please, for the tape?" Salmond said, shifting to get comfortable on her plastic chair.
"Jamie Lawrence."
The voice was boyish, as if it had only just broken. "Why did you go back to a children's home?" "Was it one you'd stayed in?" Sparks asked. He was fairly sure it wasn't, but he wanted to ease in gradually.
"No, but it was near where my mum lives."
"Your mum? I thought she moved to Norfolk when you were taken into care." Salmond had spoken to May Lawrence, and she'd said she wanted nothing to do with her adopted son.
"He broke my husband," she'd said in a tight little voice. I wish we'd never set eyes on him. Not her,
Jamie said, frowning and fiddling with the grubby bandages on his hands.
My real mum. Anyway, she wasn't in, so I started driving around and saw the sign for this council place for kids. It looked like home. Funny, isn't it?
Spark shook his head. No, we look for the familiar in everything, don't we? We look to anchor ourselves in safe waters. It was a line from a book on coping with loss he'd bought and read secretly, like porn. Grief porn. He cleared his throat. Shut up, you'll be singing him a bloody lullaby in a minute. It was getting late, and Sparks wondered if Sam would still be there when he got home. He'd left her folding some of Eileen's clothes into an old suitcase.
She wanted me to send them to the charity shop, she'd said. It's on her to-do list. Do you remember when she bought this dress?
She'd held up a sparkly number her mother had bought on a whim last Christmas.
You said she looked like the fairy on the top of the tree. I don't think she ever wore it again.
He'd picked up Eileen's favourite jumper and buried his face in it. It smelled of her still. I'm keeping this, he'd muttered, and put it under his pillow. Tell us about you and Alex, he said. We've been told you spent a lot of time together in Bangkok. Jamie nodded.
We were best friends.
But you'd only just met.
It didn't matter. We felt like we'd always known each other.
Is that how Alex felt, too?
Yeah.
Jamie didn't meet his eye.
We were going to go travelling together.
That isn't what she told her friend, Margaret Harding. She said you wouldn't leave her alone. That you were in her face. Jamie's head jerked up, and he pushed his chair away from the table.
No, we were in love.
But Alex wasn't, was she? That must have been very hard for you. You were desperate to keep her, weren't you? Jamie was nodding along, lulled by the gentle sympathy. You even drugged her, Sparks added quietly. Jamie's face flushed, and the fists were back. His solicitor came to life and interrupted.
What evidence is there for this, Inspector?
We have a witness, Sparks said.
The owner of the guest house, Mama, dear Salmon said. She says you put Rohypnol in Alex's drink to stop her going out with Jake Waters. It made her ill for days.
In truth, her conversation with Mama had been informal. The landlady had vanished again before her request for an official statement could be sanctioned, but she confirmed the details from her talk with Kate Waters.
I couldn't let her go off with him, Jamie said, moving on to the edge of his chair. I didn't know it would make her so sick. Oh, I used too much. Anyway, I was protecting her, making her safe.
Safe from Jake? Why was he a threat?
He was trying to take Alex away,
Jamie shouted, and his solicitor put a hand on his arm. They were almost there. Sparks leaned forward and said gently, Why don't you tell us what really happened on the night Alex died?
I don't know. I expect it was an accident,
the young man said, his voice squeaking on the words. What was an accident?
Alex dying,
he whispered. The solicitor made to speak, but Jamie kept going.
I didn't mean it to happen. I loved her. I didn't want to hurt her ever. But she pushed me away. I tried to hold on to her. It all went wrong.
Salmond pushed a box of tissues across the table. Jamie took one and wiped his eyes and nose, wincing when he brushed his burned skin. I need to understand how it all went wrong, Jamie, Sparks said, leaning back, giving the suspect room to tell his story.
She agreed to have a farewell drink with me. I was a bit drunk already. I'd helped myself to some beers from the guest house, and I was upset that she was leaving me. I must have held her too tightly. She stopped breathing.
Why was Alex leaving you?
Because of Rosie. Rosie had disappeared, and Alex wanted to go home. I couldn't bear it when she said that.
Was it just the two of you at the farewell party?
Jamie nodded.
There was no one else left. Jake had been arrested.
Did Alex know?
No. She thought he'd just gone off. I let her think that.
Sparks saw Jamie's bandaged fists clench on his lap.
She was supposed to hate him.
His voice was getting louder.
I told her Jake had slept with Rosie, but she didn't believe me. I was so jealous when I'd walked in on them. I wanted her so badly my hands went all tingly when I saw her. It was how I felt when I thought about Mum. My real Mum, I mean. I hate it when I think about her. Brings up all these feelings that the social worker said I need to let go. But they won't be let go. They feel as though they're rooted in my stomach.
The young man reached for his abdomen, as if to locate the feelings.
They're always here, smothering all my other feelings when good things happen to me.
The words electrified the atmosphere, and Jamie looked down at his hands.
I'd stolen Jake's passport and wallet from his bag the day before, after I saw him with Alex. I broke into his locker and took his things from his backpack. I put my own passport in there so he wouldn't notice straight away.
Why did you do that, Jamie?
I decided I'd be Jake, if that was who Alex wanted.
He told his fists.
Sounds mad, doesn't it? Do you think I'm mad?
His eyes flicked back up to Sparks. The detective shook his head gently. Go on.
I probably would have swapped them back again the next day when I'd calmed down. But he never came back. Jake was arrested before I could do it. Mama must have reported him to the police. They'd fallen out big time. I heard them arguing. Jake was saying Alex wouldn't stop talking about Rosie. That it was all going wrong. Like the last time with some Scottish bloke. That the police would come and he didn't have any money to give Mama to pay him off. Mama told him to shut up before anyone heard him.
But you already had, Sparks said.
And the younger man gave a small smile.
I heard everything that was going on. No one ever noticed me in that place, he said. Anyway, Jake picked up the little backpack he took everywhere and marched out without even looking at me. Mama must have made a call. Jake always said she was well in with the police. He was gone. Rosie was gone. I was sure Alex would come with me to Coppipi. She'd have to. Or she'd be all on her own.
But she didn't want to.
No.
Jamie's voice dropped, so Sparks had to lean forward to hear.
She didn't even want to talk about it. All that stuff I'd done to make her take me. For nothing.
What stuff, Jamie?
Sparks said, matching his tone. The younger man closed his eyes for a moment.
The stuff I've told you about. Taking Jake's passport. Telling Alex about him and Rosie. That.
There's more.
Sparks knew, but Jamie had rushed on with his blame game.
All she could talk about was Rosie. Where was Rosie? And she was going home. She said there was nothing to stay for. I was gutted.
Where were you?
In the dorm.
Was she drinking?
Yeah, a bit. I'd got her the beer she liked from the cold store. We were sitting on the floor, and I was going to tell her I loved her. But I ended up telling her about being put into care. I thought maybe it would make her feel sorry for me, make her change her mind. But she didn't really want to know. She said she was going to ring home and tell them everything. I didn't know what to do. I thought she'd gone to her room, but then I heard her shout from outside. I ran out and she was crying, saying she'd found Rosie.
The tension in the interview room was palpable. Sparks was in the dorm with Jamie, clambering to his feet, walking down the corridor to the back door and out into the hot night.
Did you see Rosie's body?
I saw a bit of her face. She had a mat over her, but I could see her hair.
Where was Alex?
In the yard. She was shaking and crying, and I tried to make her feel better. I told her I would sort it out, but she got angry with me. I tried to help her up, but she struggled. She started to shove me away, as though she wanted me out of her sight. I should have let her go, but I hung on. I kept thinking, no one's going to push me out again. And she was screaming. I think I'd frightened her. I didn't want to. I didn't mean to. I just wanted her to stop. I pushed against her neck to stop the noise and held my hands there while she struggled, banging her hands against me and the wall. Stop it, Alex, I said. I think I said. Then she did.
Jamie picked up his tissue from the table and dabbed his eyes. Sparks was replaying the hideous dance of death in the dirty courtyard. It probably only took a couple of minutes, he thought, watching the younger man slump back in his chair. Was Alex conscious? Jamie shook his head slowly.
She didn't speak after that, he said. Her face was all grey. She fell to the floor. She'd wet herself. Her legs had streaks of piss down them, and her shoes were covered in splashes. Couldn't stop looking at her legs. I didn't want to see her face again. I felt as if I'd been standing there for hours. The air was all thick around me, like it was setting, like a jelly. And when I turned my head, it felt like slow motion. Have you ever felt that?
Sparks nodded. What did you do, Jamie?
I remember I told myself I had to undo this. I had to rewind. I couldn't. I'd have to hide what I'd done so no one else would know. I took all her dirty clothes off to make her nice and clean again and put her with Rosie. I tucked the matting round them both. And then I took out my matches and looked for something to make a fire with.
Chapter 68. Friday the 19th of September 2014. The detective. They took a break when Jamie asked for painkillers for his burns. The fire had exploded into his face when he squirted more lighter fuel on Alex's smouldering clothes, he'd said. It was taking too long to catch. He'd been frightened that people would put it out before it could destroy everything. He'd got the inflammable liquid on his hands, and the flames had jumped on them when he'd tried to protect his eyes. He said he couldn't be sure who had put him in a taxi to the hospital, but he thought it might have been Mama. Sparks and Salmond crushed plastic cups of water in their restless hands outside the interview room door and reviewed the situation. He's saying it was an accident.
Well, he would, wouldn't he? Salmond said. But where's his remorse? It feels like it's all about him, not Alex. As if he sees himself as the victim.
Sparks had felt the same, manipulated by the narrative and those flirting eyes. Did you see the eye thing he keeps doing? Looking up through your lashes is classic passive-aggressive technique. Submissive, but controlling.
If you say so, sir.
I do. I was reading about it the other day.
I prefer Jack Reacher.
Salmond swallowed the last drops of water. On we go. We have another dead girl to sort out, Sparks said, and dropped his cup into the bin. Tell us about Rosie, Sparks plunged back in, and Jamie blinked.
What about her? She was dead. I told you, Alex found her in the cold store.
And when did you see Rosie in there?
I told you, after Alex found her.
But you told us that you went and got beer from the cold store earlier that evening. Jamie closed his eyes. I'll ask you again, when did you see Rosie in there? The first time.
the day after she was supposed to have gone off to join the Dutch boys, he said finally.
The submissive glances had stopped, Sparks noted. Jamie Lawrence was on the defensive.
So you knew she was dead and that her body was outside the back door for 2 days?
Jamie nodded.
I was too scared to tell anyone, he said. I thought people might think I had something to do with it.
But not too scared to push her to one side to get a beer, Sparks snapped. Did you have anything to do with the death of Rosie Shaw?
No. I thought maybe she'd got off her face. Maybe she'd choked on her own vomit.
He'd paused for a beat before offering this theory, and Sparks knew he was almost there. The word maybe was a fig leaf, a hedge against the truth.
How do you know that she choked?
I don't. I'm just guessing. That's the sort of girl she was. But I wasn't there, so I don't know.
I wasn't there. He's going to say the big boys made him do it in a minute.
Do you know who was there?
Jamie picked again at the bandage on his hands, fraying the threads, and shook his head.
All right. When was the last time you saw Rosie alive?
I can't remember now. I probably saw her in the bar or something. She was always around.
Until she wasn't, Sparks said.
You must have all been talking about it. Rosie vanishing like that. It must have been the only topic of conversation at the guest house.
Yeah, I suppose so. I was sick of hearing about her, if I'm honest.
You didn't like Rosie?
No, I hated her. We both did. Me and Alex.
Jamie had unravelled a long thread and was wrapping it tightly around a finger, making the tip turn white.
She was a little bitch, always making trouble. Alex tried to look out for her at first, but she wouldn't listen. Taking drugs, having sex with people she'd only just met. She was sleeping her way through the blokes in the guest house, you know.
Jamie shook his head in disgust.
Did you sleep with her, Jamie?
He looked genuinely shocked.
Me? Of course not. I was faithful to Alex, but pretty much everyone else was in her bed.
Jake?
Yeah. Like I said before, I told Alex.
Did that cause trouble between the men who slept with her? Arguments or fights?
Not really. No one liked her enough to fight for her.
Poor Rosie, Sparks thought. Poor, lost little Rosie.
What drugs was Rosie taking?
K, mainly. Lars got it for her before he left.
Where was he getting it?
From Mama. Everyone knew she sold K, weed, and yabba, and a bit of heroin sometimes.
And roofies, Sparks said, and Jamie looked away.
He was tiring. Sparks was turning to Salmon to signal the end of the interview when Jamie spoke again.
Can I ask a question now?
Sparks looked back at the boy. Jamie was looking up through his lashes again, as if he wanted to please Sparks, unsettling the detective.
Yes. What do you want to ask?
Have you talked to Jake? He said. You should ask Jake about what happened to Rosie.
Chapter 69. Friday, the 19th of September, 2014. The Reporter. Bob Sparks sounded very serious on the phone, and he cut me off when I tried to ask about Eileen and how the funeral had gone.
I can't get into that now. I'm ringing on official business. Dear Salmond and I are driving up to London now. We need to speak to Jake. Is he home?
Yes. He hasn't left the house since we got back. He's with Joe Jackson at the moment, being interviewed about the whole nightmare. He wouldn't let me do it. Suppose it would have been a bit weird. Anyway, Joe is on the case. A miscarriage of justice finally righted. I'd made Joe wait a couple of days. I said Jake needed to rest. But the truth was that I needed to hear the story first, to make sure it was safe to tell. Is this to tidy up loose ends or something? I thought you and D.S. Salmond had finished talking to him. He made his statement in Bangkok. I kept my tone light, but my head was buzzing with unwanted thoughts.
We'll be with you in another hour.
I put the phone down and stick my head round the door of the living room where Jake and Joe are talking. Can I have you for a minute? I say to my son. He lopes out, shoeless and in a pair of Freddy's slightly too short jeans. I've just had D.I. Sparks on the phone. He's coming to see you. Needs to tie things up, loose ends, you know? Jake's face falls. It'll only be a quick chat, I'm sure, I say. But we look at each other for a beat too long. You've made your statement. Anyway, how's it going in there? Is he asking the right questions? Are you sure you don't want me to sit in? I keep my voice bright, but Sparks's call has made my stomach tense, as if I'm preparing for a blow.
No, we agreed. Anyway, what did the police say exactly?
Jake asks. Just what I told you.
Do we need to ring your lawyer friend?
I look at my son and try to see what he's thinking. I don't know. It could look like you have something to hide if we have a lawyer present.
I'm just saying it might be best. I don't want any trouble.
No, of course not. I'll ring him to see what he thinks. Leave it with me. He nods and is about to say something else, but I cut him off. We need to go shopping for clothes before Mick does the photographs, I say, trying to get us back on track. You came home with nothing. And then I remember the pair of trousers he left at Ross's. Joe appears in the doorway.
Okay to get going again, Jake, he says. I'm on deadline. Okay. Will you make us a cuppa, Mum?
D.I. Sparks knocks quietly, and I swing the door wide open in welcome. Nothing to hide here. How are you doing? I say. But the intimacy of the hotel room in Bangkok has gone. He doesn't look me in the eye as he comes in, wiping non-existent dirt from his feet on the mat.
Is Jake here?
He says. Yes, I said so on the phone. He's through there, with Joe Jackson.
Perhaps it's best if you remove the reporter from the room,
he says to D.S. Salmond. I go to protest, but he silences me with a look. Salmond goes into the living room, and there's a short exchange before Joe comes out, pushing his laptop into his bag. He's not happy.
What's going on, Kate? He says. I'm being chucked out.
Go and have a coffee down the road, I say. The police just need to have a word with Jake. I'll give you a call in a bit. I have no idea if I will, but I just want him to go. For him not to witness what is unravelling in my own house. I close the front door on Joe and go through to the living room. Jake is sitting on the sofa, pale and coughing nervously. What is this about? I say. My voice sounds angry, but I feel more frightened than outraged. Sparks looks away. He is arresting Jake in connection with the death of Rosie Shaw on or about August the 13th, 2014. Jake stumbles to his feet.
We will be taking you to Southampton for questioning.
You need shoes, Jakey, I say, and try to catch his eye. He turns away from me, and I can't speak. Chapter 70. Friday the 19th of September, 2014. The reporter. We'd agreed I wouldn't say anything if the police ever came back. We'd been sitting together, my son and I, the night before last, while the others slept, both of us still on tie time. I tried not to interrogate him on the plane home, instead gently teasing out the details of his time in Bangkok while we ate our food. But he'd tired quickly and fallen asleep beside me. Steve had asked all his questions in the car from the airport, never pressing our son, letting him meander off into the minutiae of life in the guest house and prison. Safe ground. Freddy had listened in silence. We'd all let him off lightly. We'd fed him and run a bath for him and let him sleep.
We've got him home,
Steve had said when we finally fell into bed that first night.
I can't quite believe it.
It's wonderful, isn't it? I so wanted it to be wonderful. But what isn't he saying was drowning out the cheers of joy. We need to talk to him properly, Steve, I'd said, turning to face my husband.
We will,
he'd murmured, already half asleep.
Plenty of time.
I lay beside him, rerunning every word Jake had said, testing the statements at the core of his story, pushing at the details that propped them up, probing them like a bad tooth, looking for the weak point. But I caught myself holding back when I got too near, when something jarred. Why would he lie? Became my mantra.
I think I know what happened to Rosie,
he'd said quietly. You've told us what you know, Jake, I'd said, desperately shoring up the family conspiracy to stick our fingers in our ears. He'd looked at me and I'd held my breath. When he didn't speak, I'd whispered,
Okay. Tell me the truth, Jake.
Like I did when he was small, when I'd found a broken ornament or a missing packet of biscuits. She was drinking from a bottle of fake tequila when I last saw her. She was lying on her bed, shouting at me. I thought she'd be fine. She'd just have a hangover in the morning.
But she wasn't fine. She died, Mum.
When did she die? I'd whispered.
I don't know. Sometime between me leaving her and Mama trying to wake her the next morning.
I'd felt my hands tightening around my mug of hot milk. Okay, I'd said carefully, hardly trusting my own voice.
What did you do? I was screaming in my head. Oh, God, did you kill this girl?
Why was Rosie shouting at you? Jake's head sank onto his chest.
We were both a bit drunk and upset.
His voice had petered out. What about?
I shouldn't have slept with her.
He looked up, eyes wide with distress.
But she kept on and on about wanting me, touching me, kissing me. And we did it. We had sex, but I knew she was just doing it to get back at Alex. She had this smile on her face like she'd won. It was horrible and we had a row. I told her not to tell Alex and she laughed. I told her to shut up, that Alex might walk in on us, and she yelled in my face that Alex couldn't, that Jamie had put something in her drink to stop her going on a date with me. Mama had seen him do it. She was yelling that she was going to tell Alex, tell her everything. The whole guest house could hear. I was scared, Mum. Everything was so out of control. I just wanted it all to stop, and I left her there. God, what a nightmare,
I'd heard myself say. I could see it. I could hear the anger in their voices. I could smell the sharp stench of loathing. I'd kept looking at my son, afraid that if I looked away, there would be a stranger there when I looked back.
I was sure she'd tell Alex when she woke up, but she never got the chance,
he'd gone on.
Mama found her dead the next morning when she went to talk to her about money. She came and woke me up and told me.
Jake had taken a deep breath.
Mama said Rosie must have choked in her sleep. She said she had sick all over her hair, Mum. Oh, God,
I'd said, horrified at what I was hearing.
But you didn't tell anyone. Why didn't you call an ambulance or the police? Why didn't you tell anyone?
He'd closed his eyes and put his hands to his mouth as if to shut himself off completely. But I wouldn't let him stop now.
Jake, tell me,
I'd said, pulling his hands away.
Did you hurt her?
I couldn't bring myself to use the word kill. It's too finite. It cannot be unsaid. He'd thrown his head back in shock.
No! Why aren't you listening to me? I didn't do anything to her. I knew you wouldn't understand, but you weren't there. You don't know what it's been like. My fucked up life. All I can tell you is that I had to keep quiet. There was going to be terrible trouble. Mama said it would be like the last time.
The plasterer who died, I'd whispered. Jake had nodded.
The police came that time, questioning all the foreigners in the guest house. Mama said I'd be arrested and locked up because I didn't have the right visa. They can throw away the key, Mum. I gave her all my money to sort it out for me. She sent me to her home village for a while, and when I came back, it had all been dealt with. The police said John had killed himself.
But he hadn't. Jake shook his head wearily.
He'd been attacked in his room and robbed.
Christ! Who attacked him?
I don't know, he'd said. He was doing all sorts of risky stuff and hanging around with dodgy people. But this time it was going to start all over again with the police. I'd slept with Rosie the night she died. I thought I'd definitely be arrested. And this time I didn't have any money to pay Mama to deal with it.
It? You're talking about an 18-year-old girl, Jake, I'd said.
I'm so sorry, Mum.
And I'd listened, increasingly numb to his pleading, the excuses curdling in my stomach. Perhaps he'd sensed my heart hardening, but he'd chosen that moment to deliver his coup de grace.
And no one knew where I was. You and Dad didn't know. I'd made sure you didn't. I'm sorry, but my life was a complete mess. I didn't want you to know. I kept thinking about how you and Dad used to joke boast to people about me becoming a barrister. You put such pressure on me, Mum. I know you didn't mean to, but you did, and I was cleaning toilets in Bangkok. I needed to turn things round, get a real job or something, so I could come home a success. But time just kept passing.
I'd reached over and taken his hand. I didn't know you felt like that.
I've been an idiot, but I had no one to turn to. You'd have known what to do, Mum. But I couldn't bear you to know. Please help me now. They might put me in prison. They won't believe I have nothing to hide. Please.
And my failure as a parent had spread through me like a black poison, obliterating every other thought and feeling. We weren't there for him. This is our fault, my fault. Later, I wondered if I would have acted differently if he hadn't said that. But it was too late by then. We'd sat in silence for a while, the only sound the ticking of the clock, like the heartbeat of the house. Then I'd done what I always do, asked endless questions. Who else knows you kept quiet about Rosie's death, Jake?
No one. Well, Mama. She won't say anything, obviously.
Could anyone else have heard her telling you?
I don't know. She made a lot of noise, but Alex was drugged and out of it. So that leaves Jamie.
Jamie always in the way, Jake had said to himself. We'd talked on and round. But in the end, he'd persuaded me that nothing could be gained by speaking up. He'd held my hands and looked me in the eye as he'd summed up. My son, the barrister.
Rosie died and no one was to blame. Even if Jamie did hear Mama telling me, he's a murderer, isn't he? Who would believe him? We're talking about the rest of my life, Mum.
I'd felt so vulnerable, like when I'd first held him as a baby. The all-consuming fear that I might do the wrong thing and harm my child had made me cry then. I'd been overwhelmed by the responsibility. I was out of my depth, but I had to keep him safe, help him grow, do the right thing. I'd carried the burden in the pit of my stomach, seeing danger everywhere. Steve had tried to help, explaining it all to me. Postpartum hormones, maternal instinct, blah, blah. But it was visceral, all-consuming. I'd thought it was over when our son got big enough to look after himself, when we waved him off to university. But it is never over. Here I was again, holding his future in my hands. And I'd gone along with it.
Chapter 71. Friday the 19th of September 2014. The Detective. Jake didn't speak in the car. He watched the other vehicles through his window until they pulled up at the police station. He hadn't had time to do up his laces before he'd been led to the car, and his feet slid in and out of his old trainers, making him stumble. Salmon steadied him.
Through here.
She guided him into the custody suite, presenting him to the grumpy-looking sergeant at the desk. Sparks watched the ritual, ticking off the steps before they could talk to him. Jake was silent unless spoken to.
He's retreated into his head, Sparks thought. Is he rehearsing his story? Has he told Kate what he's done?
His only words were, "This is better than Klong Prem."
"Can you give your name for the record?"
Salmond said when they were all sitting in the cramped interview room. Jake looked even younger than before, with his schoolboy glasses and bitten fingernails. "Now then," Sparks began,
Why don't we start with your relationship with Rosie Shaw?
I didn't have one. I hardly knew her, Jake said.
Alex said she was flirting with you.
Alex?
He looked completely confused.
In emails she sent to her friend Mags. She said Rosie was trying to steal you from her.
I don't know what Alex said in her emails. How could I?
His voice remained steady and reasonable, and Sparks reminded himself that Jake had been a law student.
But you do remember going to Rosie Shaw's bedroom on the evening of August the 12th? He asked, matching Jake's tone.
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
He was beginning to hesitate, to trip over his words. Sparks pressed on.
We have two witnesses who say you did. That you went to her room and had sex with her.
They're wrong. It sounds like supposition to me. Did they say they actually saw us having sex?
Jake shifted back in his chair, and Sparks wondered for a second if he was actually enjoying himself.
He'd soon put a stop to that. It's not supposition, Jake. Your DNA was detected in traces of semen found on Rosie's body.
Jake's head went down. His solicitor put his hand up.
I'd like a minute with my client, please.
The detectives filed out and leaned against the wall in the corridor.
He'll tell us the truth when we go back, boss, Salmon said.
Nearly there, he agreed.
Jake's face was blank when they went back in.
My client has a statement he would like to make regarding his relations with Rosie Shaw, the lawyer said, and sat back to give the floor to Jake.
I had sex with Rosie Shaw, that's all, he said, his voice flat. I didn't hurt her. She wanted me to have sex with her, to get back at Alex. But she died after I left her. The owner of the guest house told me later that she found her dead.
So you had sex against your will, Sparks said, deadpan.
I was drunk, and she egged me on.
I see. The witnesses say there was a row. You were heard shouting.
I was angry because I felt so guilty. I liked Alex, and I'd done something incredibly stupid. Slept with her friend. What a fuckwit.
He banged his hand against the side of his head.
Was Rosie Shaw alive when you left her room?
Yes, I swear she was, he said, his voice higher and louder. She was saying she was going to tell Alex about us.
So why didn't she? Go and tell Alex straight away.
Alex had been drugged by Jamie.
So he knew.
Sparks nodded to himself.
He's a complete psycho. He put something in Alex's beer to make sure she didn't go out with me. Rosie told me. Oh, it was such a sick place.
So she never got to tell Alex.
Jake shook his head wearily.
No. She died in the night.
Well, that was lucky for you, wasn't it? Your little secret could stay that way, Sparks said, writing a note on his pad.
Jake pushed his chair back and stood, shaking.
You are joking. I didn't hurt her. It was horrible when she died. Mama came and woke me up and told me. I was so shocked. I was like a zombie. I didn't know what to say or do.
Sit down, Jake. So what did you do?
The younger man hesitated and retook his seat, but clung onto the chair as if it was bucking underneath him.
It felt like a dream. Like nothing was real for a while. I lay there in my bed and tried to get a grip on what was going on. I must have fallen asleep again. When I woke up, Mama was acting as though nothing had happened.
You went back to sleep after being told that a young woman you had had sex with hours before had been found dead in her bed? Sparks said incredulously.
I'd had a lot to drink, Inspector, I told you. I know it sounds like I didn't care, but I did. I was in shock and didn't know what to do, so I went along with Mama's story that Rosie had gone off with the two Dutch boys.
But you knew she hadn't, didn't you, Jake?
He nodded miserably.
I was going to tell Alex, but I was arrested before I could.
That was more than a day later. You had plenty of opportunities.
Do you think I don't beat myself up every day that I didn't? But I couldn't. You don't understand. I was so scared. I didn't know what to do. Scared of what would happen if I did tell. Look, I'd slept with her. People might have blamed me for her death.
So you didn't tell the police when they arrested you?
No. I hadn't told them who I really was. I was already in a world of trouble,
he said, and closed his eyes. Jamie says you were there when Rosie died.
Jake looked up and almost smiled.
Well, he would, wouldn't he? He hates me because Alex wanted to be with me, not him. He killed her rather than let her choose anyone but him.
And he'd say anything to get his revenge. I bet he slipped something in Rosie's drink, too. She was going to tell Alex about him and his little roofie habit. Maybe he decided to stop her. He's capable of anything.
When they got Jamie Lawrence back in, he'd stopped the flirting. He sat down and put his bandaged hands on the table.
I was having a sleep, he said. I've answered your questions.
There are a couple more we need to ask, Sparks said, leaning forward to get the younger man's full attention. Did you drug Rosie Shaw? He said. Jamie sat up straighter.
She was doing that herself.
But did you give Rosie anything? To stop her telling Alex about the Rohypnol?
Mama has told us she knew about it. Was Rosie going to reveal the sort of man you really were? Jamie pressed his lips together tightly and shook his head as if he didn't trust himself to speak.
We're doing tests on Rosie's blood, Jamie, so we'll know if you did, Sparks said.
He was pretty sure the toxicology tests couldn't produce evidence of Rohypnol at this late stage, but the suspect was at the tipping point in his confession and needed just a nudge to reveal the truth. The silence grew, filling the room, but Sparks waited it out. He sat completely still, offering no distraction to the boy opposite. Jamie's fingers twitched on the table, and his eyes closed in apparent concentration.
I only gave her a little bit,
he muttered finally, almost under his breath, and Sparks had to lean forward to hear.
Just to shut her up, until I could figure out what to do next. I put it in her tequila, and she went to sleep.
Except she didn't go to sleep, Sparks snapped back. She was unconscious and full of drink, and you left her there to choke. That poor girl.
She should have shut up,
Jamie said quietly.
Anyway, it was her own fault. Nobody forced her to drink herself stupid.
Sparks looked at him without speaking for a long minute, letting the poisonous words drip down the walls.
Did you put her body in the cold store, Jamie?
No. I woke up the next day and she'd gone.
But you are the one who heard and saw everything going on in that guest house, Sparks went on.
The lad no one noticed.
Jamie shrugged.
Well, I had nothing to do with it.
You told us this morning all that stuff I'd done to make her take me. Was this the stuff you meant? Disposing of a dead body? Hiding it from the police?
Jamie banged one of his hands on the table, making his solicitor jump.
No!
But you knew she was dead, didn't you? And you helped to cover up Rosie's death. Mama told us that it was you who suggested making up messages from her.
Salmond pressed on.
To keep everyone quiet about her disappearance. You seem to have been controlling that situation, too.
I didn't care about Rosie. But Alex was upset about her going without a word. I thought it would help her make up her mind to come with me.
But she didn't, did she?
He shook his head wearily again.
No. It all went wrong. Like I told you.
Chapter 72. Friday, the 19th of December, 2014. The Reporter. I've had a card from one of my ghosts of Christmas past, Glenn Taylor's widow, Jean. The office forwarded it in a big brown envelope along with my expenses statements and some union stuff. In it, she writes about our shared trauma of having the press on our doorsteps. As if I'm interested. I suppose I was so much a part of that time in her life, my presence interlocked with her memories of when her husband was accused of taking little Bella Elliot, that she thinks she knows me. I was there with her as the story unfolded, in her kitchen, her sitting room, in the hotel where we took her for the interview. And in her head, I suppose, I still am. But I haven't heard a peep from her since the last appeal in the Bella Elliot case, although she still appears in an occasional story, when she's written to the parents of missing children or befriended notorious criminals in prison. Now it's my turn to be pitied. She's heard about my trouble and obviously wants to rub my nose in it. She doesn't say that. Not her style, really. Little Jeannie Taylor wants to tell me how sorry she is to hear about Jake. I don't want her to use my son's name. I don't want her to touch anything of mine. I won't reply. I tear the smiling snowman in half and put it in the bin. Jake won't know. He's gone skiing with Steve and Freddie, a boy's only trip to take his mind off things. Steve said he needed it. Jamie Lawrence's trial is coming up in the new year, and we've all been on edge, waiting for the whole thing to be churned over in the press. For a while I thought Jamie might be sent back to Thailand and face the death penalty for murder. By lethal injection, Joe, my new best contact, reported to me.
They haven't executed a foreigner or anyone else since 2009, but we won't want to send a Brit to death row. It'll be dealt with here. You can be tried for killing a Brit anywhere in the world in the British courts.
That won't please the families. Leslie rang me after Jamie Lawrence was charged with Alex's murder and told me they were writing to the Home Secretary, demanding he be sent back to Bangkok for trial. He killed her in Thailand. He should face their penalty. We're having a bake sale at school to kick-start fundraising for our legal costs. We want our voices heard, she'd added. And I pictured rosy-cheeked juniors munching on Hang Jamie Lawrence cupcakes. The venom in her voice had shocked me. She wasn't the same woman I'd last seen at the girls' memorial service. I'd stood near the back, unsure of my welcome, and watched Leslie, a quietly dignified presence at the heart of the service. Jenny, a pale shadow beside her. The church was full of young people, the girls weeping freely and hugging each other, while the boys stood awkwardly in groups, not knowing where to look, or put their hands. Jake had talked about coming, but I persuaded him to stay at home. He'd have been a photo opportunity for the waiting press, a jarring distraction on the girls' day. I'd gone alone, and mouthed the words of Amazing Grace, as the kids around sang their grief and held hands. I left before the final notes ended. I would never have thought of Leslie as an advocate for capital punishment, more of a campaigner for road safety. But I know now that protecting our children changes who we are, who we seem to be. Their battle for justice and the death sentence has had Louise Butler heaving and pushing from the rear. My editor didn't want to take it on, according to Joe.
Bit down market for our readers, he told the news desk. And it won't happen, so it will look like our failure.
The O'Connors had always presented a united front, but I wondered how the Shaws would cope from their opposite corners. It was Joe who told me that Mike had moved back in with Jenny.
Wife number two kicked him into touch over his fumble at work habit, he'd said. Jenny took him back. They're like newlyweds, apparently. I give it 6 months.
That will be long enough for the crusade to die its own death and be forgotten. Joe says Jamie's still claiming Alex's death was an accident, a loving embrace that went wrong because of his history of rejection. My office son has tracked down all the mothers, including the sad woman who gave birth to Jamie. It won't make for happy reading when the case finishes and the full background can be revealed.
I feel my fingers itching to write the story. But I can't this time. I'm part of the story, and I'm back with Jake and his loving embrace with Rosie. I wonder how my boy will fare if he comes under cross-examination. It would only be as a witness to Rosie's claim that Jamie drugged Alex, not as a defendant. He wasn't charged with anything in the end.
There is no evidence or reliable witness to report that anything untoward happened while Jake was with Rosie, our lawyer told us confidently. He's admitted not telling anyone about Rosie's death, but he was not a witness to it, and he didn't see her body. It really astonishes me the CPS is even considering a case of perverting the course of justice,
he'd said, each time we met to spend another £500 of our money. But we had to wait another nail-biting month before the decision was relayed to us by phone.
Sensible decision. There just isn't any evidence to go with,
the lawyer said. Bob Sparks hadn't delivered the news himself.
We can put it all behind us now, Steve said, after the lawyer's phone call. Make a fresh start.
Jake is definitely looking to the future. When he returns from skiing, he's going to look into returning to his law degree.
I'll be a mature student, Mum. I'll do it properly this time.
He will, I tell myself in the small hours of sleepless nights. He'll be a better person. But there are days when I find it hard to look at my eldest son, without choking on the guilt I feel for hiding his. I study that face I gave birth to, and search for his remorse. But he seems to have managed to put up a shield to what happened in Thailand, as it is now referred to in our house. Steve smiles optimistically and calls it the resilience of youth. And I let him think that. I decided not to tell him the truth because he would want to do the right thing. Ring Bob Sparks, have Jake own up and take the consequences. Because he sees things so simply. They're either right or they're wrong. I see beyond, into the grey. Blurred margins where the consequences wait. Steve didn't see our son in prison. I did. I saw the old man face of our boy. Felt his despair. I can't be responsible for that happening to him again. I distract myself with thoughts of my own future. I'm still on gardening leave.
You can sort out your geraniums, Joe said, trying to cheer me up.
And I'm in with a chance of a payoff in the next cycle of redundancies. Steve wants me to take it. But I can't bear the thought. I need an anchor to my existence, especially now. I ring Bob Sparks, just to hear his voice, really. He'd been in his usual pew, the one nearest the door, at the girls' service, and we'd managed a few vanilla words. But nothing since.
The icebox,
he answers. Hello, Bob. It's Kate.
Well, how are you doing?
He sounds unsure, but not hostile, so I plough on. Not bad. You?
Same. Back at work full-time now.
Good for you. I'm ringing because guess who I've heard from?
Go on.
I can hear the smile in his voice. Jean Taylor.
Bloody hell. What did she have to say?
And we are back on common ground, picking up the threads of a former life. Perhaps I ought to write and thank Jean Taylor for her intervention. Today, I feel I've turned a corner. I've done my stable cleansing. I've finally thrown the trousers away. The trousers I brought home in my overnight bag. The trousers with their telltale stain that could expose my son's lie.
He came round in a bit of a state and wanted to smoke,
his friend Ross had said when he'd given them to me.
He got some sick or something on his trousers.
And I'd forgotten them in the head-spinning events that followed. But I'd known as soon as I'd found them in my bag, thrown into a cupboard after I got home the first time, without Jake. I'd known they could undo everything. He was there, in that bedroom with Rose's body, just like bloody Jamie Lawrence said. He'd hidden her. He'd perverted the course of justice. I was going to confront him with the trousers 100 times... But I always held back. I suppose I hoped he would tell me himself, that he'd take responsibility for his actions. But he didn't. And whenever I allowed myself to think about him being sent to prison, his life permanently blighted, I told myself I owed him this second chance. The girls won't get another one, but I can't change that or make amends. Leslie and Jenny would like everyone involved to be publicly executed because they want them to suffer as they have, but pushing Jake back into the dock won't give them closure. This is what I tell myself as I bundle the trousers up with a couple of old jumpers in a plastic bag and walk to the recycling bins up by the co-op. I stand there, unable to move, indecision clamping my arms by my side, until Bet from next door calls to me from the pavement.
"Hello, Kate. How's that lovely boy of yours doing?"
And I shove the bag into the dark maw of the bin. Gone.
"He's doing fine, Bet. How are you?"
I call back, as if our lives are unaltered. I've had calls from reporters asking me to tell my story in time for Jamie's trial. I'm sure the words dogged, devoted, brave, and inspirational will be scattered freely across their articles. To them, I am the good mother who stood by her son, solved the case, and won his freedom. I suppose I am, in a way. I'm waiting for the first one to arrive. She'll be here soon. I wonder if she'll bring flowers. I would, if it were me, knocking at the door. I've put out a plate of mince pies, and my favourite family photos are sitting among the fake holly on the mantelpiece. I sit quietly. I have my story ready.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Suspect, written by Fiona Barton and performed by Claire Corbett, Riaz Mitrovic, Sean Thomas and Mark Meadows. Copyright by Fiona Barton, 2019. Production copyright, 2019 by Audible Limited. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed